This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Daryl Ong, and you are tuned into the show that's all about the people and places of the capital city. And today we have something special for you. We look into a world where books talk back. And no, I'm not talking about audiobooks, but we head over to a library with no books. The human library is a worldwide phenomenon that's designed to promote dialogue, break stereotypes, and encourage understanding. And they are made up of human books, literally just human books with their own life stories, and they interact with the readers that come in. The human library has been set up in 70 countries over the world, and we are privileged to be one of the host countries that uses this innovative method of dialogue. Visitors are given the opportunity to speak informally with the books, and these human books vary from all kinds of different backgrounds, and that is the point of the human library, to have a collection of all different kinds of backgrounds on their catalogue. Some of the titles include Former Death Row Prisoner, The Woman in the Veil, The Person Living with HIV, and many more. Through the human library, they aim to address worldwide issues by having human books speak about their lives and their struggles to their readers, allowing them to ask questions and to break perceptions and stereotypes of the culture and the background that the book belongs to. Coming up in the show, we speak to one of the books, one of the best-selling books, David Mann, and his title, The Former Death Row Prisoner. But before that, here's Ralph and Alan from Scope Group Asia, a social enterprise and the team dedicated to setting up the Human Library Malaysia.
The idea came up back in 1993. A group of five friends came up with an organization, a movement called Stop the Violence. So they wanted to take on the growing issues of gang-related incidences after they saw a friend of theirs who was stabbed 6 times and he almost died. So it actually highlighted some of those issues that were there in their communities. So because most of these gangs were actually kids from different backgrounds, you know. And at the time, Denmark, you find maybe different people, from, let's say they were black kids, and they were always left out in certain events. So that brought a lot of prejudice, and these kids were always angered. You know, there was always that hate. Okay, why can't I go to a certain club, or why can't... So that's how these gangs started off. So after this incident, they had to start this organization, Stop the Violence. So the idea of Human Library was to bring together all these different people from different backgrounds, bring them together and promote dialogue and let them get to know each other better, understanding, and raise the awareness.
Okay, I see. And it stopped by in Malaysia for last year, 2013. Like you said, you know, you bring people of different backgrounds together to have a dialogue. But how was the reception, you know, in your first session when it started?
Well, Malaysia is a melting pot. You have so many different cultures here, so many different backgrounds. So yeah, the thing is that we also here want to create understanding and awareness. And as for the first session, that really worked out. People get an open mind, they get a different point of view, and that is really what we want to do with Human Library.
Okay, great. I mean, the concept is pretty simple. You get a group of people together, but you know, the word human library, you know, it might confuse some people. Can you just explain to us, you know, what the human library is?
Basically, human library is a global movement which brings together a range of different human books. This is individuals. We bring them all together to come and share about their unique story. So the book in this instance is actually a real person, a real individual.
It's a real life story.
So in the library, well, it's more mobile. Like, for instance, the ones that we're having here in Malaysia, we've been having them all over the place. So you have the person, he's going to come up with their unique story, and they feel, okay, motivate other people, let me come out on certain different topics that people may want to find out about.
Yeah, the main thing is that you get a library card, and with this library card, it says which book that you want to read. So you kind of like borrow a book, but then it's not a tangible book. It's a person.
It's a person.
Yes. Yep. So that's the main difference, that you are actually talking. And it's a two-way thing. So you can also ask questions. It's not that it's only from the book's perspective, but you can also get different points of view.
I see. So you basically go in to talk to someone in a book that talks back.
Yes.
Basically. How do you choose your stories? I mean, there are millions of people in KL and there's a lot of stories there. How do you acquire these stories? And can anyone in KL be a book in that sense?
You yourself can be a book. Anyone can be a book. So because we actually get people from different backgrounds and we usually focus in marginalized minorities, people who have faced prejudice, people who have been stereotyped before, or individuals that are representing those groups, because we believe prejudice is not something we all prejudice, we have prejudice in terms of. So when we select a book, we want to, there's certain areas that we feel, okay, let us get the message across. Let's give people the opportunity to read a particular, maybe a particular book that you've never had the opportunity to read. So our catalog of books, we look across a wide spectrum. So we won't only focus on one selection of books. So we can have different individuals all with different stories.
Okay.
At the end, it's about raising that awareness, helping people to understand better about others.
Okay, to break the stereotype.
Yes, it's about breaking the stereotypes. And the only way you can do that is having those people who are being stereotyped and let them tell their story.
Yeah, can you give us examples of some of the human books you have?
We have A Single Mom. I mean, it's maybe in other parts of the world, it's not such a big deal. But here in Malaysia, it's still, people are still looking at it in a from a different perspective. And we have somebody which that has HIV, so AIDS. People have a lot of questions about those certain topics because it's kind of like unknown. It's not that you don't spread the world like, hi, I have HIV. I mean, it's not really something you share on a first date, for example. So not everybody knows a lot about it, and that's what we want to do. We want to give them the knowledge. We want to give them, like, without boundaries, talk to somebody and see that it's also just a person.
You know, this human books, you know, how open, I mean, they're all on a voluntary basis, right?
Yeah.
How open are they, you know, they're telling their life story? I mean, they're just putting a life story for the world to see.
Yeah, the thing is, when you're putting your life story out there, it takes a lot of courage, right? So you may have a lot of people say, yeah, I also want to be a human book, but we've also had situations where people chicken out.
Oh, okay.
You see, because they think it's, they find out that it's not that easy to just go out there and you tell people your story. So being a human book actually is, you have that courage, you're actually pushing your own boundaries and saying, you know what, this is who I am. And you're willing to share that story with other people.
You have to be confident about yourself and your story. And yeah, you shouldn't be ashamed of yourself. And I think that's one thing that Human Library also wants to show. Like, I'm not ashamed of me, so don't you be scared or have a stereotype about me, because maybe that's not the person who I am. So they actually create awareness around their own situation.
And the type of experience that they go through. But in the sense of, you know, choosing your books, right? Like you said, it's not anyone can be a book. Is there a certain, in that sense, quality to maintain the book on the shelf?
Yeah, of course. We're not just going to pick. So we usually ask people, okay, tell us why you want to be a human book.
So that's actually a screening that happens. Okay.
So it's not like if you say, I want to be a book, we put you into our catalog. Of course, libraries also choose the kind of books they can have in their libraries, in their stock. So it's the same. If you want to make it a meaningful experience that actually helps promote understanding, you know, and reduce the prejudice, you need to have quality books. So we are also, when we recruit our books, we actually look at what's the message and what can we get across to people.
Was there many that you had to turn away?
Not really, but there's some that we feel, okay, at the moment, we can't use them as books. So we don't turn away. We just feel maybe for the particular session or the particular Human Library session that we're going to have, we feel, okay, we don't think
it'll be a fit.
It'll be.
The books are voluntary basis, like I said just now, and you know they're basically telling their life stories to strangers. And I would assume that gets a bit awkward. I mean, you're telling your story to someone you don't know, and it's an interview-based format, right?
Interview, no. It's more, see it as a chat. I mean, so I'm sharing a bit and you can ask questions. Mm. But books, there are like rules. And for example, you can't ask a really personal question. If don't make the book feel awkward, or if a book doesn't want to answer the question, they can also say like, sorry, I don't feel comfortable answering this question or sharing this.
Okay.
So they do get protected. Like, okay, you leave a book certain guidelines to it. You get it.
It's like any normal library, right? You have rules. Mm-hmm. So you're told you bring back the book in the same manner you took it. So it also applies in human library. Mm. So we will give you the book, which is the person, and we want you to return the person in the same state that you found.
Untouched, in the same position.
you can't take the book home. No. Yes, you can read for that particular. We don't want you to take the book home. You can come and read so that others also get to learn about the stories when they get to read. So it's all about having guidelines to safeguard the books as well. They're coming voluntarily. And so they also need to feel like, okay, this is a safe environment and I can share my story. Otherwise, if as readers you do not respect the book, it actually might force them not, oh, I don't feel like telling my story. This is how society is, or this is how people are looking at me. Mm. So it doesn't help. Yeah, because as much as you think you're reading the book is actually reading you as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's why she mentioned it's about conversations. Mm. A lot of time people, you go in there, you think, okay, I need to read the book.
Sit down and listen, but it's not like that.
I see. Yeah, that was going to be my next question. I mean, when you read the book, you normally read, you know, maybe the back cover first. Who normally starts the conversation? Does the book, you know, okay, so this is the premise of what I am going through, or just the reader just prodding and asking?
No, I think that most of the time the books just start, and along the way, it's turning into a two-way session. Mm. So questions asked, and then the book can also ask questions.
Mm. I know it's a very interesting way, but isn't there a danger of, you know, the reader stereotyping, like you said, okay, a HIV patient. You know, that's the danger of them actually putting them in the same category, all of them, based on the book's story.
Yeah, that's the whole idea, because
they get in with a certain stereotype, with a certain thought about a person or about a disease or about something that happened to somebody. And they get out, like after when they finish reading the book, they get out and they have a different insight. They have a different perspective, different opinion. So that's what we want to do.
But, you know, let's say I am talking to a HIV patient. His story or her story might cloud my judgment on all the other HIV patients.
It's subjective, I think. You can take what you believe, because they will tell you their life story, or they give you a perspective of their lives, especially how they're living, people living with HIV, and it's not easy. There's still a lot of stigma, right? And people they'll probably look down upon you and they're like, okay, it's your fault. And yes, of course, maybe you made a mistake or it wasn't your fault, but it still happens that, you know, you're still a human being. There's a quote that says, our lives may be different, but our goals and dreams are the same. Mm. So we should still treat one another with dignity and respect. And that's why certain books, we get people who are actually from the marginalized communities or from a certain background, or to actually have the opportunity to raise that awareness. It has to be a learning experience. So you will go in there and you will learn something different. So next time you see somebody, a person living with HIV, from what they've told you, from their own experiences, then you have a better understanding.
That's true. Yeah,
it's more about appreciation. Yes, you may like what they do or whatever, but if you understand what they're going through, you become more appreciative.
That's true. Guys, do you think that, you know, public libraries should have this kind of sessions?
I think so. I mean, you have audiobooks, you have Kindles, there are so many different types of books. Why not a human book? And it also is a two-way thing, so it's different again. It has to do with innovation. And I think less and less people go to a library, so it's getting less attractive. And with a human book, you can make it more attractive. You can actually make people come to your library again. And maybe then afterwards they leave and they do take like an actual book.
Mm. Do you know if it's implemented anywhere in the world into the national library system?
Well, when you look at a lot of countries, usually the public library is the first place where you want to host the human library because there's already people.
Okay, yeah.
It's the environment is enthusiastic.
That would be the ideal venue.
Yes, that's the ideal venue. Like she's mentioning, it can actually be a different part of the library. So if you don't feel like I need to go open a book, let me have a conversation, which actually gives you the same as reading a book. So across the world, libraries are usually the first place because there's already the space. So here in Malaysia, we haven't done it in a library, but you see, we've only been here for
2 years.
Yeah. So we're still out looking for partners as well. That's the thing. So a lot of people still don't know about the human library, but we are out there looking for partners. How can we make it better? How can we benefit the communities out there? Because libraries are where communities come to learn. So if you have the human library as well, we were able to get rich to other people, the access.
Yep. What sort of impact does, you know, your human books leave on the readers? You know, what are the initial feedback you receive after a session?
A lot of people never finish reading a book.
Oh, okay.
So they're like, I want to stay, I want to have a longer session.
It's a book that never ends.
Yeah, it is, it is. And the people, some people are in shock because they got a really interesting story. Some people are inspired, like, oh, she's doing this. I mean, this is a single mom. I'm not a single mom. And if I look at what she's doing, I can improve my life. I can do more. And so that's, our two impressions that we leave.
Every book has its own uniqueness about it. That's the richness of human library. So one book, all the books are not the same. So you do learn something and you really appreciate, because the idea is to positively change people's attitudes towards one another. And that's what I believe with the books that we usually have. You will learn something in the end of the day, because the books, as they're representatives of different communities, and it actually helps those who are actually out there, or somebody who has a similar problem but they don't know. It's usually difficult to say, okay, what am I gonna do? And then you find that, okay, there is somebody who's having the same problem with you. So there's some who actually it helps them come up and say, you know what, let me, if he can do it or she can do it, I think I'm also able to overcome some of this.
That's great. Inspiring.
Yeah, that's what I love. They feel inspired and
encouraged.
Yeah, they feel encouraged. Yeah, because for instance, one of my favorite books is The Former Death Row Prisoner. I won't spoil for you. I won't get. But it's a very interesting book. And a lot of times when we look at the readers when we're walking around, most of them are shocked. You know, but he is a guy. Yes, he went through, but it didn't stop him from, he made his mistakes and he paid the price, but he shouldn't live his life saying, okay, because he moved on. And that shows that even out there, people can move on. Don't always have that tag that, okay, yes, I used to do it. Yeah, you did it, but now it's about moving on and having that courage and determination to be a better person.
So for the David story is about moving on. So I guess every different book has a different life story to it. I've not attended a session, but I definitely will in your upcoming plans. Can you guys just tell me a bit about the future plans for the Human Library in Malaysia?
2015 should be very much interesting. We actually, like you have seen the feedback, we actually, a lot of people are getting interested in the human library movement. So we are on the lookout for partners, because human library usually, we get sponsors. So the only way for us to go out there is by having the sponsorship. Yes, as a company, we do it as a part of our communities, giving back to society as well. So we usually get we get sponsors as well, who will help, okay, to do more outreach programs as part of the human library. So we are on the outlook for interesting books as well, volunteers, because it's all about volunteering, right? The books are volunteers, librarians are volunteers as well. So we need all those resources so that we can make the human library more interesting and we can actually reach more places.
That was Ralph and Alan from the Scope Group Asia, giving us an insight into the objectives of the human library. Okay, coming up, we hear the story from one of the books in the library. It's David Munn's The Former Death Row Prisoner. Keep it here on I Love KL, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're tuned into I Love KL, keeping you connected to the people and places of the capital city. And this week, we're dedicating an entire episode to an innovative method of dialogue. It's called the Human Library, where instead of reading books, you listen to stories from all different kinds of backgrounds. We managed to catch up and listen to the story from one of the books. Here's David Mann and his title, The Former Death Row Prisoner.
In the year 1980, I was involved in drug trafficking. My drugs come from Thailand. And during those days, when I make one trip from Thailand right into Malaysia with a drug of 120 kg, it's morphine. I make 60,000 one trip. Every month, I make two trips. Out of 30 days, I only work 2 days a month. And I make 120,000 RM. Those days, you know, when you have that type of money, when you bring back to Thailand, you convert into Thai baht, you become a millionaire. And that time, I have no time for God. And I've been chasing money. And well, I find that there is no peace in me. And there is no joy. Because in my trade as a drug trafficker, I don't trust anybody. And I don't enjoy in the big crowd. That's why I can survive for 8 years. Been trafficking drugs. After 8 years, I was arrested. On that day, I was arrested. It was 8 o'clock in the morning on the 8th of August, 1988.
A whole lot of eights.
All the eight. And when I was arrested, the police, of course, physically abused me. And I was put in the police lockup for 60 days. After that, they bring me to court, and then the magistrate kind of charged me for 39B. 39B in Malaysia is a mandatory death sentence. From the police station, I was transferred to the prison. And from the prison, I didn't notice that so many guys knows me. But during my time as a drug trafficker, I helped a lot of gangsters, those drug addicts. I helped them a lot. And I never knew that inside the prison, they knew me. And, well, I was in the remand for 6 years, waiting for the case to come out. And, you know, in the remand, every day they fight, you know. I have to survive in the prison. And, you know, prison food is not that good. So I also try to do some business in the prison by selling drugs, all this type of thing, right? And of course, I survive in a very luxurious way inside the prison, if you have the brain, you know. At the end of the day, I was informed that my day of the hearing comes, and, well, I lost the case. When the judge say that I'm guilty, and they sentenced me to death by hanging. And from that day, I told myself, I'm finished. And they transfer me from the remand to the death row, and I was put in a death row for 5 years. A cell that is 6 feet wide, 11 feet by length, and I was inside there for 5 years. In the beginning, I don't know what to do, you know. So on that very week, I've tried to program myself and make things easy for me. And I start to go to the library. Inside the prison, they have library. And I borrow a lot of books to read. And until there are no more books for me to read, and I have no choice, I just, you know, have to borrow all this woman's magazine. One morning, I read an old newspaper. The old newspaper, there's a column. It says that Malaysian Care help ex-prisoners when they release from prison, a place for them to repent, a place for them to detoxification, and a place for them to be disciplined. And after that, they will find you a job. When I read that, it gave me a hope. I said, wow, this is the place. If I can walk out of this prison a free man, I'm going here. See, because food and lodging are provided free of charge. I cut off that piece of small little paper and put in my diary. After a few years, one morning, the officer came with a pile of documents, and he called out my number. He don't call name, you know. In the death row prisoners, they call number. He said, tomorrow is my date of appeal. After hearing that, I knew my case, I cannot win. I will lose my appeal. With 120 kg of morphine inside my car compartment, I'm driving myself, nobody in the car. The car is my name, proof and evidence is all there. What am I going to do that evening? I'm so scared. And I've been observing these prisoners whenever they go for an appeal and they come back, when they lose the appeal, within 1 week they want to hang him. I've been observing all this and I think to myself, I'm very scared. And that evening, I look up to the small little window in my cell and I kneel down. When I kneel down, I call upon God. I say, God, I don't know you, but I know you're up there. God, forgive me. If I'm given a second chance, I'll prove to you that I can become a good man. I keep on talking and talking and talking until to the very next morning. The officer came. He said, dress up. The van is waiting. And I quickly dress up. And as I left the room, I still turned back to look at the window. I said, God, help me. This is my last chance. And they escort me to the waiting van. And after that, the van proceed to the Supreme Court, whereby they have three judges. And on reaching the court, I was put in front of the wooden bench. And my lawyer saw me. He came. I said, Mr. Rajasingham, you please do your best for me. He said, yes, I will do my best, but you still have to play your part. I said, how to play my part? He said, two handcuffs here and two handcuffs here. How? He said, no, you just look up to the ceiling and then you call out God. Ask him for mercy. So I have no other option except to obey him. If I don't do that, the next moment when the three judges came out, when they deliver the verdict, I'm finished. So very obediently, I just look up to the ceiling and I call out God. And minutes later, the three judges came out. Everybody will stand up and bow. And then my lawyer, the deputy prosecutor, and the three judges, five of them have a short discussion. And after that, the judge in the middle delivered the verdict, saying that in this case, there is a doubt. When there is a doubt, they cannot hang me. They have to amend the section. From 39B, they amend the section to 39A, which means 39A is a maximum sentence of 20 years inside the prison. Whereby on that day, I was already serving in the prison for 11 years, which means I still have 9 more years to serve. And because of my good record and my good behavior in the prison, they further pardoned me to another 5 more years, which means I still have 4 more years to serve before I go free. Now, I was transferred in the Supreme Court. My lawyer came and hugged me. And he hugged me. And he very gently, he whispered in my ear. He said, don't forget what you have promised God. Wow. I was thinking, how does he know what I have promised God? After that, I was transferred from the death row to the ordinary cell. And 4 years, I was allowed to work. And I worked as a layman, you know. A layman like, you know, laying bricks, plastering cement, you know, doing wiring, plumbing work. I learned that in a prison for 4 years. And today is my rice bowl. All this, I'm a contractor now. So on that day, I was released. After 4 years, finally, the day came. I was released from prison. And they bring me to the prison office. I need to chop my, you know, claim all my personal things. And after doing that, one of the officers from the KDN, from the Ministry of Home Affairs, he came and then he told me, he said, today is your day of freedom, but our department will never allow you to apply for your international passport again because of your serious crime. So I couldn't argue with him. I took my bag, I walked out. And, you know, after 15 years, I served in the prison. I have no direction. I'm standing in front of the prison. I don't know where to go. I was from Penang. Of course, I don't want to go back to Penang. I better go down to the city, to Kuala Lumpur, whereby nobody knows me. I have no friend, no relative. I took a bus, came down to KL. The bus stopped at Putrajaya. The time was already evening. I'm very worried where to sleep. During these 4 years, I worked as a layman. The prison paid me 40 cents a day. And I managed to save 200 ringgit after 4 years. So I couldn't afford to rent a hotel. And I just wandering around in Pataling Street. And I've come to an Indian temple, you know. And slightly opposite the Indian temple, there's a Chinese temple. I was thinking maybe I can convince this guy who in charge of the temple. I approached that guy, and after talking, convincing him, he finally agreed to let me sleep there for 2 nights. And on the second night, 4 o'clock in the morning, he shooed me out of the temple. He said, it's 2 days already, 2 nights already, you better go. People is coming to pray. So I couldn't argue with him. I washed my face and I walked out. It was very dark, very dark. I was wondering, why God bring me here? I have no direction. I have no peace to sleep. And I call out to God. I said, God, why? Why must all these things happen to me? Have I not suffered more than enough for 15 years in the prison? As I keep on walking, there's a voice who speak out from my right ear, open up your diary. And I quickly open up my diary. And without flipping open the diary, the piece of paper fell. I pick it up, I saw Malaysian Care. And it was very early. Now I waited until 9 o'clock in the morning. I got hold of a roadside phone. I put some shilling. I called the number, and somebody answered that number. And he gave me instruction what bus to take. And finally, I reached 7.5 mile Old Klang Road. And a person there who interviewed me. After interviewing me, he bring me to a place called Rumah Petros. That is 3.5 mile Old Klang Road. That bungalow shelter a lot of drug addicts, a lot of those handicapped. Many of them are HIV fellas, and most of them are ex-prisoners. And when the car reached there, I opened up the car door and I walked on, and one group of guys coming out and, you know, welcome me. And he said, welcome, brother. And I looked at them, who is your brother? After staying there for a few months, and I was allowed to work outside, somebody came and introduced me, recommended me to a place in Taman Desa, whereby it's within walking distance to work there.
If I had something to say to the listeners, is would be to look out for the next event where the Human Library is going on. And you definitely should pay a visit. Uncle, before you leave, would you like to leave a message to the people listening?
I would like to advise those younger generation not to do what I have done. Especially in this modern world, many people, they will fall trap to this trade, you know. And to live a very cautious life and to earn an honest living. Don't earn easy money like me. I certainly wish all those listeners the best of everything.
That was David Mun, the former death row prisoner, one of the books in the Human Library. To keep up to date and to get notified on their upcoming session, do check out the Human Library's Facebook page at facebook.com/humanlibrarymy. We've come to the end of the show today, but if you missed any part of the interview or if you'd like to listen to David's story again, please do download the podcast at www.bfm.my and also let us know your thoughts by tweeting us at BFM Radio. I'm Daryl Ong, have a pleasant weekend and tune in again next week for another episode of I Love KL, bringing you the stories from the people and places of the capital city, only right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.